going on, brother?
It's all good in the hood. I feel like Shanaynay on Martin. Remember? Oh my God.
Hola, yo, lady. Hola, yo, lady.
This is episode 3, brother. We are in episode 3. What?
Yes, Grits and Glitter Podcast, baby.
You know, welcome. And I am so excited about this episode. Oh my goodness, we're talking about drag queens and politics. What? I think we know a little bit about that.
I mean, I might have dressed once upon a time as in drag, you know.
You don't want to see me in drag. I make an ugly drag queen, y'all. People just haven't had the makeup yet. I just don't know.
Oh, see, I always go and get my face beat by one of the legends here in Florida. Shout out to Miss Velvet Lenore and the Lenore family, honey. Well, she gets me together.
How you been? How's your week been, man?
It's been good. It has been good. It's been incredibly busy and productive. And, you know, I just got back from San Francisco and Seattle from a conference. And it just been a lot of work, a lot of grinding. So I'm very excited to be home with my baby girl, my puppy. but I might have a little man here that came to see me. Yeah, now.
Oh, my goodness. So you got the dog and the man. You are flying high.
I do. Feeding both babies.
I'm loving it. How's San Francisco? Is it still cold? Because, you know.
San Francisco was still. Actually, I feel like I kind of got acclimated a bit more after day one this time in San Francisco. And it was nice to sort of walk around. I went to the gym. I was, you know, wearing my gym clothes, as I walked around the city a little bit more. So it was a lot of fun. It was great to be home.
You get a reputation to walk around town with them tank tops on. You know that.
Listen, nothing ain't changed. I've been doing it for over 20 years, baby.
You know. I think the boys are ready for you walking around in tank tops here in Fort Lauderdale. You think they ready?
Listen, it's almost hot boy summer, so you know I got to get these guns right. You know.
I love it. What's hot boy summer? What is that?
Listen, it's where guns out, sun's out, guns out. You know, that's what we do. Every gay boy runs around in tiny little booty shorts. You know, that's how it works in the summertime. You know.
I love it.
How are you doing, brother? How's your week been?
Ooh, it's been a very full week because I have, you know, two podcasts simultaneously. I'm working hard. I have, you know, Bliss Happens podcast and our podcast, and we're all kind of launching at the same time. You know, Bliss Happens started to launch a newness because it was Voice of Unity. So we're doing all the things. We're going out on YouTube now for both podcasts. I'm the editor. I'm putting all the little twinkle things on everything.
The bells and the whistles.
And I'm busy. I'm busier now than I've ever been, Charles. So it's been a crazy, crazy kind of busy week. But I'm blessed. I'm grateful. And I'm blessed. This week has taught me, you know, the realness of where I want to be and what I want to do. Because we've had conversations about that. You know, and I remember Oprah Winfrey recently said that when you decide what you want, you shift everything to support that vision. So that's kind of what I've been doing. I actually had a change of heart. I was putting my application in for a church, and then something happened, a little church business. You know how church business is. We talked about this last time. Church business. And boards. I got to tell you, sometimes some stuff. So I'm still questioning, is that really where I want to be? Okay. Or do I want to just focus in our podcast and writing the books and all that? So I got a chance to do that journey this week, and I'm still meditating and praying on it and going, okay, you know, show me, you know what I'm saying? God, show me where do you want me? What do you want me to do? Because I love both aspects of what I do. So,
listening to you talk about this, you know, sort of revelation that you're having and trying to figure out next steps and next parts of your life, some of the projects you're working on now, what does the future hold? I always think about one of my favorite moments, and I'm going to quote, you know, Miss Sister Mary Clarence from Sister Act 2, right?
You know.
And she says,
"What'd she say?
If you wake up in the morning and all you can think about is singing, then girl, you're supposed to be a singer."
So I do wake up in the morning thinking about how to make our podcast and our message out there clearer. I know I'm a podcaster and I love that aspect of it. What I don't like is the business part of churches. And I can really admit that and go, you know, that's the part that you got to get up and do the business of a church if you're leading a community. So I'm just being honest with myself. Do I really want to continue to do this? So I wake up in the morning thinking, oh, we got to do a podcast. Yay.
Right. I am, for those that know me or don't know me, you know, I'm very a musical person. So all I keep hearing in my head is, when I wake up in the morning feeling like, she don't say his name anymore, though. Right. She edited his name out now. we don't say it, allegedly, right?
Are you rehearsing for your next show? Because I know you got a show coming up.
Oh, when I tell you, man, when I tell you how incredibly excited I am for this next concert coming up, June 27th at Hunter's Nightclub, shout out to them because it's such an honor and a privilege to partner with them on this and to really sort of amplify Black LGBTQ voices on specifically Wilton Drive and in a neighborhood that isn't as diverse as the community likes to believe or say that it is. And so I am just so proud to create a space where our voices can be heard and we can bring more visibility and more recognition and more just positive messages from a Black LGBTQ perspective. So I am beyond excited.
I am excited for you. I can't wait to be there. I just love your voice. I love how you bring your unapologetically Black queerness to what you do. And you are absolutely one of my heroes and watching you, how you move and maneuver. Because it's not that easy to maneuver like that in South Florida. You do it with so much grace and love, and the haters are out there, and they're listening to this podcast for both of us.
Like,
you know,
I feel like one of my favorites. I feel like Wonder Woman sometimes with these haters, right? Like, bam, 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 bam. You know what I mean?
You
like,
know what it's I'm just saying.
Getting from every which direction. You know what I'm saying?
You know, yeah, and I'm going to take a line or a lyric from Tay Tay. Haters are going to hate.
That's
so
true.
So what are we going to do?
That's
what
true.
What we gonna do? Hey,
in the words of Andre Dank, we gonna rise up. We can't pay for that, so
you gotta watch, because if you don't, we be owing money, and we're gonna get hit up on YouTube if you say too much of that. But speaking of YouTube, we launched our YouTube channel this week.
I'm so excited.
What did you feel when you saw our videos up there? The YouTube page went up there. How was it for you?
For me, it was a tremendous amount of pride. You know, a lot of people have been sending messages on LinkedIn and some on Facebook and commenting of how, you know, funny we are. And, you know, I love this. I will tell this story. And shout out to, you know, my 80-year-old grandma who is listening and watching. And she said, baby, you funny.
I love that. You know what's so amazing, Terry, is that I go back and do the editing and I laugh out loud some of the things that we say. I don't know. Maybe we're just entertaining each other, brother. I don't know.
I think that's it. That's it. We're just entertaining each other.
No, we keep on doing that.
Absolutely. Hopefully you listeners and you watchers out there in podcast land absolutely find this hysterical, because I wholeheartedly believe in as we talk about various topics and sensitive subjects and things like that, pop culture, it's really important to laugh. Like, we don't laugh as a society as much anymore. We are so now conditioned to censor everything that we say. Yeah. We can't poke fun. We can't laugh. We can't tell jokes anymore. And I feel like, from my perspective, we have completely gotten away from that. And so if I could interject any type of humor to make a person smile, then God dang it, that's what I'm going to do.
That's what we got to do.
So,
in this idea of the visual podcast and the audio podcast, what do you like better, listening to yourself or viewing yourself? What do you like?
Well, I will tell you, I am the first to raise my hand and be like, I don't like listening to myself. I don't like watching myself. I can't do it. I do, especially when I perform, I go back and, you know, people record and send me the videos and whatnot. So I watch from a very sort of particular lens, right? Like, I'm critiquing every single thing that I do, every facial expression, every place in my mouth where I'm placing notes and things like that. Like, there's always that. And then I get frustrated. I'm like, you know what you was doing, girl, why you do that? Like, you know what I mean? So then I'm like, girl, let's not watch ourselves anymore.
Come on now.
You know what I mean? So,
yes.
I don't, like, I think, and I know we chatted about this a little bit, I love that people listen to podcasts. I think you and I are so incredibly expressive, and I think people resonate with that authenticity and that sort of in level of engagement. Mm-hmm. Just let the defenses down. Let's relax. Let's kiki and have a good time. So I like them both.
So if you're listening, that means you got to go over to YouTube and catch this visual. It is so good. And make sure you like and make sure you share and leave a comment and let us know what you think about the podcast.
Please, you please. We doing this to y'all. We doing this to connect with y'all. Absolutely. And share, spread some love, you know.
Yes. Well, it's time for a Did You Know? And I know I'm waiting to hear from your Did You Know? Because I love the Olympics.
Yes. So we're just 100 days to yes. Paris 2024. And, you know, those that know me know I'm a big, huge athlete. I have competed in the gay Olympics multiple times. You know, she might have met a little bit, you know. I love everything.
You can't fly past that. What did you medal in? Wait, come on. If we can't blow our own horns right here, what did you medal in, brother?
This is true. So I medaled in volleyball several years ago. I got a bronze medal. Yeah. And then in the Paris Olympics, Paris Olympics in 2018, my brother and I were the number one seeded doubles team in the world, baby.
What? That's amazing.
Yeah. So I love everything, the pageantry, the pomp and circumstance, the opening ceremonies. I love everything about it. And it's so cool for it this year to be in Paris. And we've already had some historical moments happen leading up to the games that I'm going to talk about today. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, my goodness. So what is your favorite event in the Olympics?
Oh, well, so I have a few.
Okay. That's okay. Tell me.
I have a few. So, of course, being a track and field athlete for over 15 years, that is my all-time favorite. Yeah. And then right alongside of that is volleyball, as I was a collegiate volleyball player as well. So I absolutely love both sports, but I watch gymnastics religiously. I'm a college gymnastics fan. It's really interesting how the Olympics come and everybody gets excited, right? We watch every sport under the sun, but throughout the year, we're like, girl, I'll see you in 4 years. You know what I mean? So I mean, there's a few of those, but I really just love the camaraderie. I love the pride that people take in representing their countries. And obviously, boom, boom, let's go Team USA. So,
I love the Olympics as well. And what I really love about the Olympics, that it's in Paris. That means I can wake up later on and catch the opening, because when it was over in, like, say, China, and stuff was dropping, like, late night for us, early morning for them. I was like, listen, I'll have to get that on YouTube on a replay.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's exciting. I think it brings us a sense of what the human body can do.
Yes.
I love track and field. And I mean, I'm an old school, you know, track and field FloJo days. I mean, but you remember them days and, you know, Carl Lewis and, I love though that time that it was so exciting when it was in LA and, you know, and it's going back to LA as well, but I'm excited for Paris. My favorite event to watch is track and field, and then it's gymnastics, and then it's tennis and swimming.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if I should say this, but I love them boys in the Speedos.
You ain't never lied. You ain't never lied, child.
Step the track and field uniform getting skimpier and skimpier.
Okay, so let me just say. So Adidas has a new outfit out this season. Did you see what Adidas has out this season?
The coochie thingy.
Listen, it's like right on men and women on the uniform. It's right. And then did you see what color it is? It's like a purple, but then a lavender light purple on top of the dark purple.
Do you think they're gonna let that go?
Yeah, well, the Olympic uniforms are very different. They typically go a little bit flashy, but more conservative than I feel like the Adidas outfits went this year. But I was shocked when I saw outdoor season hit and all these people wearing the Adidas. I don't necessarily know if I like it though. It looks a little weird. And then, you know, on women, things start to rise and it looks a little fun. I'm like,
you know who made major fun of that was Sherry Shepherd. I saw this.
My girl.
She was not having it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, I will say about the swimming thing, I was so sad, and this is years ago, I'm dating myself, but years ago when a lot of the men switched to the longer pant uniform, or not just the pant, but like the three-quarter pant too. I was like, child, I can't see booty, honey. She was like, rewind, honey, bring that swimsuit back.
Oh my goodness. Do you have an all-time favorite athlete?
Oh, I do. Oh, I mean, my first love as a young bantam boy track and field athlete was Gail Devers. Like, hands down, Gail Devers was my all-time favorite so much. And anybody who's seen the high school photos of me, they saw my long fingernails. I had long fingernails in high school. Yes, I did. They were like out to
here. Where can we find them those photos? I'm looking.
There's some photos in the book. You will. One year I was crowned basketball homecoming king, and I've got the crown and my hand is holding it. If you look down by my hands, you will see the nails.
I love it. I love it. Mine's Allyson Felix. I love her. I mean, she is probably has won the most Olympic medals.
Yes.
I think female and male, maybe.
Yes,
female
that is male correct. Or, that and, is correct.
So I love her. And what I love about her, that she was like, Nike didn't give her a deal. She says, okay, so I'm going to make my own shoe.
That Hello. Is so, do it. Do
Diva,
it for yourself.
Diva.
Right. Right. You're right. See, wasn't, I hope I'm in like this music mode, but that reminds me of the song, Sister. Do it for us. Can't pay for it. Sorry about that.
That's it. I love it.
I also love that she went to the Supreme Court and fought for women's rights post having a baby. That was a major deal in our society. So I agree. She is unbelievably amazing.
So when the Olympics are happening, we'll have to come back and do a little commentary. Maybe we'll do a little commentary on that. You good with that?
I'm good with it.
So, did you know, and we kind of chatted on this on our production meeting, did you know a male version of Karen is called Kevin? I know. The male version of Karen is a Kevin. And I was reading that most Kevins are white gay men. I know, right? So if you don't know what a Karen is someone who is hyper privilege, and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this. I'm calling the cops. And I was reading how the Kevins.
I'm calling the cops.
Right. How the Kevins are very similar to that. You know, they're very much like, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing that. And oh my goodness, that's so disrespectful. And how can I'm like, and I'm reading some going, I know some Kevins. Do you know some Kevins?
I do. And I can see it. I can 100% see it. They act just like a Karen, for sure. For sure. No tea, no shade to the Kevins that I know you watching and listening.
However. Love you. Well, we just bringing light, and like we always say, we ain't speaking for every black gay person out there, black queer person. We just have a conversation.
That's it.
This idea of Karen, it was so interesting because we became very aware of Kevin in the pandemic.
Yes.
And there were all these videos of these privileged white women that were just saying, oh my, these incredible things like, I can't believe that you're sitting here at this table and this is my table and I can't walking the dog. I can't believe you're in the park walking the dog and I'm calling the police. And I was blown away about this idea of the Karen. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, because we're in a pandemic, we're seeing this more. We are bringing this shit to light. We're seeing it.
Absolutely. I think because we were isolated so much, you know, lots of issues and situations were coming up for us during the pandemic, right? We're hustle and bustle every single day of our lives. And then when we were literally forced to sit down, all this shit came up for us, the workers. All this stuff came up for us, right? We got to tell people this is my, we might have moments of R-rated, right? PG-17 or whatever right? We were literally faced and forced to face a lot of different situations and a lot of sensitive and taboo subjects. You know, obviously a lot of people during the pandemic talked about white fragility and white guilt and all these other things, right? So I'm not surprised that a lot of the Kevins came out during that time period as well. I think Kevin and Karen bring up a lot of race relations with respect to that. I think it brings up a lot of gender situations and gender questions with respect to that. So that can go, we could go deep with that.
Well, I think in a few episodes coming up, we're talking about dating. And I know we're going to get into, Black queer love and dating and what happens and all that. And I find that that is going to be a subject that we can really talk about some of the Kevins that are out there.
Absolutely. They're
going to be writing and be hating on us, brother.
Listen, I believe in the children are our future, but I believe in calling a space. I don't know why I'm so like musically inclined.
I was about to say, we're going to be owed money. Doc, we're going to be owed money.
And just put it on my tab.
Oh, Lord.
I really do believe that let's call a spade, right? The only way for us as a people and as a society to move needles forward, to get beyond some of these, you know, internalized things, some of these things that are prominent in our society and our cultures, and we have to talk about it. We have to call a spade. We have to be, you know, knowing that we are uncomfortable, but be uncomfortable being comfortable. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how we're going to have to move
forward. For sure. For sure.
Before we move on to our next segment, I did want to say that with respect to the Olympics in Paris coming up and the history that has already been created, I would certainly love to bring to attention to our listeners and our watchers out there. We have our first Black USA, Team USA swim coach in Anthony Nesty that is taking Team USA to Paris Olympics. He's coached at the World Championships and coached a few gold medalists and things like that. But to be in the Olympics and see a Black person run the pool for our team, like, that is so incredibly historic and amazing, and really elevates a sport that has predominantly been non-people of color. So I am so excited and proud. He's a gold medalist himself. He created history in 1988 by winning an Olympic gold medal, upsetting, you know, America's golden boy in Matt Biondi. So very, very excited for that. And then also, I don't know if people have been watching, but you and I talked about gymnastics. Yeah. I don't know if people have been watching over, you know, the last three years or so.
Absolutely.
We have a tremendous amount of Black females that are representing.
You know.
Representing, you know. Right? We had the U.S. in 2020, we had USA Gymnastics Championships, the top three finishers, gold, silver, bronze. We're all Black women.
Yeah. You know,
all Black women.
I'm not talking about gymnastics, not bring in Simone Biles, because she is the GOAT. I don't care what anybody says. You can debate it all day long, but look at her record and look what she has achieved. She is the GOAT. And if we have more time in this segment, we have to bring in Serena and Venus. But you know, you're a tennis player, so but we ain't got time for this. We have to move on.
I just wanted to make sure that folks know that, you know, especially in these sports that have traditionally been predominantly white, that we stepping in, and like the Williams sisters, we're stepping in and kind of taking over.
Yes. Well, before we move on, we have our very first sponsor. You want to tell people about?
We do. We are so excited. We'd like to take a minute to tell you about one of our favorite photography teams. It is Denise Royal and Tony Brown of Royal Brown Photography. If you liked our promotional shots for Grins
You
and
know.
Glitter, and I will say we've gotten a lot of positive feedback and people liking our crazy fun photos. That's a complete testament to the amazing eye and shots for from Royal Brown Photography. So thank y'all so much. Please go
Love
and
y'all.
check them out.
Love
Let
y'all.
them capture some of your memories, help you to create new memories. They are an amazing team. So follow them on Instagram, it's Royal Brown Photography. Or you can email them at royalbrownpics, T-I-X, at gmail.com. Shout out to Denise and Tony. We love you
Thank you
dearly.
so
Thanks for
much,
making us look
dude.
good. Thanks
Yes.
for correcting my eyes a little bit, you know.
Thank you, thank you. So our grits for the day is very interesting, and I am just kind of I've been doing the research about our global LGBT experience, and there's a lot of incredible things that are happening and not so incredible things. And you brought me up to speed about Kamala Harris. You want to talk about that?
Oh, Miss Kamala Harris. So Kamala just held the at the White House, of course, just held the a Pride Month reception. And really, the whole purpose was to bring LGBTQ leaders from across the country together to make sure that we're celebrating the work that we have done, but also note that we have so much more work to be done. There are a huge amount of bills on the legislative that, you know, Republican folks are trying to get passed. There are over 200 bills that legislative is challenging LGBTQ rights. And thank you to her and her staff in the White House for really sort of bringing us together and also working very closely with the Human Rights Campaign
Right.
to ensure that we battle, we collectively put our voice, our forces together in order to combat these bills, and that's currently on the bill at legislative levels, right? So she's doing an amazing job. I know Biden also just did a campaign for the LGBTQ community, and I just continue to love and respect their inclusivity of folks like us, marginalized communities, to ensure that we have a seat and a place at the table, and that folks know we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, you know what's really important? I think people need to go back a couple of terms, go back to Obama years. It was Biden that said, "No, brother man, brother
Absolutely.
president, we got to light up the White House's support
Yes.
because Obama was not always supportive of LGBT rights. I mean, he came in inclusivity, but he was like not boom." And it was Biden that convinced him to really step it up. And I remember when the White House was in our pride flag, the whole White House. It was the gay house. I called it the gay house. Look at the gay house, y'all. You know, I think that's very powerful, and shout out to Biden for that. What I love about what this whole event with Kamala Harris, it really talked about the resilience and the stick-with-ism when you have a whole entire, a group of people are saying that we want to take away rights, but Kamala and Biden is saying, no, we're going to continue to support, and we're going to recognize, what needs to be done. And again, HRC has always had some issues with me, because I support HRC. I believe in the Human Rights Campaign. I believe in it. But I also did not see a lot of people that looked like me. And when I would go to HRC events when I lived in California, I would be sometimes the only Black person there, brother. And I'm like, wait a minute. So is it the white HRC? Come on now. I think that's something that we need to continue to look at, and we need to put it out there. Y'all need to have some more representation.
Absolutely. So I do serve on the South Florida
Yes, you do.
Steering Committee for HRC. When I tell you how I joined in the fall of 2020, and what I saw then has drastically transformed to what I see now. It is primarily Black and Brown people leading the South Florida Steering Committee for HRC. I can't speak to the other chapters across the country, but I do know that there are people that have a problem with the fact that the South Florida Steering Committee looks the way that it looks. There are people that have whispered in my ear. There are people that have sat across from me at lunches and said, I have a problem with this. Well, you have a problem with this is because it's not what you are accustomed to.
Wow.
It's not the way that it looked before. You have a problem with this because these folks are in place now in positions of power, forcing the issue of inclusivity.
Yeah.
They're enforcing the issue to ensure that when we fight for LGBTQ rights, we're fighting for people of color's LGBTQ rights as well. That's a problem for you because you're not accustomed to that.
So what we see is, and I'm very, very clear what I hear, and this is my own experience, when I speak to someone who's a non-person of color, and I talk about equality, there is this energy around we're taking something away from them.
Yes.
Well, we're not asking to take away your rights. We just want the same rights no matter where we live, no matter who we are, no matter who we love, no matter what color skin we are. It is so important that we realize we're not taking something away from you. I might feel that way, but no, we're not taking anything away from you. We want to have the same playing field. And that is the point that I think HRC can really begin to look at. This is an issue across the country, across the world.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. I think we get so caught up in, you know, non-communities of color saying, well, if we continue to give them more power, they're going to surpass, or they're going to take away from, or they're going to do this. But nobody's trying to take away things from you, right? We can't fight for equality and only say you want to be equal in these lanes.
Yeah.
You have to fight for equality across the entire field.
Absolutely.
Not just pick and choose what you want to be equal in, right?
So what was, okay, so what was the deciding factor or part of the thing that really shifted the way HRC looks like in Southern Florida? What were some of the elements? What were some of the things to bring in more diversity? Because we want to give some solutions as well. We can call things in, but we want to talk about how, what's the change? What is it?
Absolutely. I think, again, we've talked about this and we've seen this term or this phrase in a lot of social media, a lot of, you know, large platforms over the last few years, but it's really about representation. Right? Mm-hmm. Representation matters. People need to see themselves in the folks that are in positions of power, fighting for equality, fighting for funding, fighting for equal pay here or health equity, et cetera, right? They need to see themselves represented. And I think that's what transitioned with the South Florida Steering Committee for HRC is we started to pull in members that were of Black and Brown or Caribbean descent. And I think a lot of my opinion may not be the popular opinion in the room, but for me, I think, you know, as Bill Clinton said once upon a time, white America, right? Like they got mad because they were now the minority in the group, right?
Right.
Sorry about it. Welcome to our space, right? Welcome to what we deal with every day of our lives. Welcome to what we have dealt with historically, right? Welcome to understanding what it feels like to be a minority in a space.
Yeah. So how do we get more people that look like us to get involved with political activism or to get involved with an HRC where they don't see more people that look like us? How do we get this? I believe that's going to be a part of the solution. We have to get involved into these organizations. So how do we do that? How do we get people to come out and say, I'm going to be a part of this?
I think there's a few different things I think needs to happen. I think folks need to understand that the buck starts and stops with you, right? We so often, especially as Black people, right? We sit back and say, oh, that doesn't affect me, or that has nothing to do with me. So I don't need to have a voice in that, or I don't need to have an opinion, or I don't need to give money to, or I don't need to go volunteer to. Well, when we get past that mentality, then you will realize every single thing that happens does indeed in some way, shape, or form impact what who we are and what we do and how we navigate in society, right? So I think we've got to change our mentality first. Yes. I think the second thing is realizing that you have to vote. You have to vote.
Ooh. That's key. That is so, so key. And those who are, and this is, I had a conversation with someone and who doesn't vote, and it's a family member. I'm going, why are you not voting? Because I don't like any of them, but you're not voting. It's getting someone into the White House that doesn't want you to have equality. May you be black, gay, a woman. So you not voting means that you're going to put someone in the White House that's going to take away all the rights. And Clarence Thomas already said, we coming after you gay people.
That's
We took it out the women, and now we're going to come after the gay people.
100%.
Come on, Clarence.
100%.
And it does impact our future. This is so important. We got to realize that everything that we do here is going to impact seven generations from now.
That's right.
It's not just about us.
Right.
But did you know, and I'm going to bring another, did you know in there, there is a call for a state of emergency. And the first time, you know, HRC is saying we have to declare a state of emergency on the LGBT rights, LGBTQA rights.
Yep.
I mean, I know it sounds all dramatical. The drama queens are here. It's I just made up a word, dramatical. Mm-hmm. But it is.
We don't have to patent that too now. Thanks.
It is a state of emergency, and people don't believe that. You know, just pick up a newspaper. Or are there any more newspapers?
I mean, they're out there.
Are you sure? Are you sure?
We rush for one. They out there.
Well, our newspaper, shout out to SFL. Online. It's online.
You can get
the link to our column in the program notes, so make sure you look for that too. And we're doing some good things. Our third article is out there. But I want to talk about the legislation that's going out there. This is a landscape legislation that is about taking away our rights. And it says over the past year, check this out, over 120 bills have been introduced to take away the rights of LGBTQA Black folks as well. Come on now. 120, and it's not even July yet.
Right. I remember, I'm glad that you confirmed that new number of 120, because I recall last year in a few meetings where at one point there was over 200. So I'm happy to hear that number has decreased, but even 120 is still an astronomical number.
But it's only specifically
targeting. Right.
And it's targeting transgender youth.
Yes.
Transgender queer. And then the whole thing is, I was watching, what is it called? The Queerty Awards.
Yes.
I'm so old. Look at me. I'm like going, Grandpa, what is that? What is that name? The Queerty Awards. I was watching it on YouTube, but I loved it. Because these young, trans-binary, beautiful, queer kids, they don't give up. Bibbidi bleep. They're like, I'm going to go. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. But
I think that's what's so beautiful is these younger generations are kind of taking the baton and fighting in the way they know how to fight, right? Yeah. It's about social media. It's about campaigns on social media. It's about their level of activism with who and what they are and how they dress. And like, they're just putting it all out there, and they're doing it in such a younger way that like the older generations is like, wait, are you fighting? And like, yes, they're fighting in their way, how they know how to fight. And it looks different than what the older generations used to do.
You know, TikTok. I know it's owned by the Chinese, and some people got on me, you on TikTok now, and the Chinese is getting you stuff. But the TikTok nation is really getting the information out there to people that would not come into like a church or a political event. They're going to see it on TikTok. And I shout out to TikTok, you know, and getting the information out there. And I hope that TikTok is, and I believe it will be, an instrument to get the young people out to vote.
Agreed.
So important.
Yep. Okay. Absolutely agree with you.
Well, I might have to like create a persona, a drag persona on TikTok to give some spiritual lessons in drag. What would my drag name be if I'm like Reverend what? Can you help me get a drag name?
Ooh. Well, most people say traditionally people make their drag names based off of like, and I might be mixing this up, but people would create their drag names based off of like the first street they lived on, the first pet's name that they had, things like that. So think about that. That's a good place to start.
No, no, it would be Reverend Shooter York. I know, right? My first dog was Shooter, and I lived on New York Avenue. So Reverend, I would be Reverend Shooter York. That could work. Reverend Shooter York teaches spirituality on TikTok.
I kind of
gotta work that. We need to work that. Okay.
I'm here for it. Shooter York.
Child, you know, this is the kind of the conversation we've been talking about, Drag Race, and we get to get into the glitter of this.
Yes.
You know, oh my goodness, I'm like, I'm going to say some things. I know I'm going to get my gay card pulled, but let's go. I love Drag Race, but I don't watch it all the time. But yeah. I guess this season was legendary. I didn't see the season. I know I'm going to go and see. I'm going to go back and binge it. I watch Drag Race Superstars or
the All-Stars. Yeah.
I love the All-Stars because it's like less bitchiness. But what made the season so incredibly, you know, important? Why was this an important season?
So I will say, because you watch All Stars more than the regular season, they just announced the cast for All Stars 9, I think it is.
Yeah.
Season 9. So, interesting cast. I don't know how I feel about it yet. You know,
really?
It's all people we know, but it's an interesting cast. But baby.
Yes.
Season 16 of RuPaul's Drag Race was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying with respects to, you know, the bitchiness and things like that. I personally feel, is my opinion, this might have been one of the bitchiest regular seasons ever.
Really?
These girls were letting each other have it.
Wow.
Have it.
Wow.
It's funny to watch, but I think sometimes when it becomes too much, it takes away from the artistry. It takes away from the challenges. It takes away from the camaraderie of what they do. But, you know, it makes for good TV. People love that. People love the snarky. People love the bitchy. You know, it makes for ratings, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, but, I mean, and not but, and... I can only take a little bit of two people going after each other in a competition. Yeah. For me, like, I if I got to watch a competition, I'm going to watch, like, British Bake Off. Because they're so kind and loving. And I did a bit, I cried, but that's another show. So what happened that was so amazing about Drag Race, the winner was...
Nymphia Wynn. So... in my opinion, this season's finale, which just happened last Friday night, this was one of the best finales, in my opinion, ever. It was everything. It had drama. It had, the winner was, you know, Nymphia Wynn, and she had never been in the bottom, so therefore never lip sung for her life or for the crown or anything. That girl, and she's known as Miss Banana, right? She wears the yellow. She's got bananas on all her costumes for the most part.
Banana.
She served the looks on the runway. Like, no, it is like nobody's business. It is artistry. It is, you know, anime. It is Japanese. It's her culture. It is unbelievable artistry, right? Honey, Miss Nymphia hit that handstand on the back on the wall, start twerking her legs and her booty.
It's over.
Yes. And she ended up in the finale. They had the top three. It was Sephora Cristal, Nymphia Wynn, and oh my gosh, why am I drawing a blank? Listen, the third one.
Yeah.
She was amazing throughout the season. However, when she got to the finale, honey, she tried so hard to be funny. Right. She tried so hard to be sort of in there with everybody. She tried it, and it was dry. It didn't work. It was not the business, not the tea for her. And I thought she was great all season long up until the finale. But when I tell you that I actually thought, and lots of people, I was in Seattle watching the finale at a bar. Yeah. And when I tell you that people in the room were like, Safira thought she was going to win, baby. By the time that finale came to where it was them lip syncing against each other, it was over. It was over. Nymphia came out like guns a-blazing. And she danced. She was lip syncing all over the place. It was everything. It was absolutely everything.
Is she Asian?
She is. Oh, yeah. Yep. She,
she's gorgeous.
She's absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. And when I tell you that her looks all season long were unbelievable. Some of the best looks we have ever seen on the show. She's definitely the first queen to be crowned the winner who is East Asian.
Okay.
Yes, Taiwanese. So unbelievably amazing historical moment for that, which I thought was obviously anytime we can create history and have more diversity, have more inclusivity from different backgrounds and things like that. That to me is amazing. Just remember the third person's name, Plain Jane. Honey, Plain Jane gave us Plain Jane in the finale. Sorry about it.
Well, listen, his name is Terry Dyer. Anyway,
I see it with a C.
You know what I do love to do? I love to go on YouTube and I like, I know I follow the queens on YouTube. I listen to the podcast. One of my favorite podcasts is Monique Exchange and Bob the Drag Queen. I'm like going, I love that show. I'm going, oh my God, did they just say what they just said? And then I laugh and I go, they did it. Yes, she did. 100%.
Yes, they did. 100%. I want to tell you and tell all of our listeners, hopefully, y'all keep listening. I love Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange. They, to me, remind me of my best friend, my big brother. We've been best friends for over 20 years now. We act just like they do. We banter, we kiki, we tease each other. Their relationship is a spitting image of his and my relationship. So I absolutely love them for that. And I love that they are, once again, just unapologetically themselves. Honey, what they say is what you're going to get. So if you don't listen, then go listen, but don't forget to listen to us.
Please give a shout out to. But okay, so who is your all-time favorite? And I think my all-time favorite is Bob the Drag Queen because comedy. Have you seen her comedy?
I have, on YouTube, and he
does a crowd work. And he just works the crowd, and I'm going, oh my God, I'm in belly laughter where it hurts so much, and there's tears running down my eyes. So that would be my favorite drag queen, I believe. And who's your favorite?
So I have a few that are my favorites. Surprise, surprise. She likes everybody.
Of course you do.
Surprise, surprise. But my all-time favorite, and I love Bob. I think Bob is so hysterically funny, and I love Monet specifically because she's from Kansas City. Shout out, right? And she's an opera singer.
Oh, I know.
So we have that in common too.
On All Stars, when she sang opera,
I most certainly did. She redeemed herself from her regular season.
That's right.
Her regular season was not.
Did she try to do? She came back and said, "I had to do it. I had to." 100%. I was like, "Go girl."
That was an iconic moment on All Stars when she sang.
Moment. 100%. Iconic moment.
My favorite, it for so many reasons, is the incredible Miss Latrice Royale. She is so amazing to me.
And she's a Floridian.
She is. Oh, I have to say this right now. This is funny that I clearly spoke this into existence because my phone is sitting here ringing and it's Latrice Royale's manager who's calling me. But I just love everything about Latrice. I love that there is a story and she is representing tragedy and issue that she had in her past, how she's been able to overcome that.
Yeah.
And really bring her life to such a positive space that she's impacting and influencing younger generations. People look up to her. She's funny. She's Miss Congeniality. She just cares about people. And there's a sense of realness to her that I love. And if you haven't seen her Netflix special, which
amazing. Amazing. Also, too, there is a couple of mini documentaries on her and her life and how she met her partner. And I'm just just look it up. So one of the things I love to discuss is how do you watch Drag Race? Because I have friends that say, you got to watch in a group. Then I have another friend that's in L.A. says, no, I need to watch it by myself so I don't need to hear the chatter. I can see both, and I like watching by myself, but I have been in groups watching Drag Race, and it is the most funniest thing to watch my friends commentate.
Yeah.
Yes. How do you like to watch your Drag Race?
So I've done it in different ways over the years. I had friends in California that we would sometimes go out every Friday night to one specific bar, and we would have a good time and kiki and laugh, and the whole place is going, crazy. We've done it to where we've had people over to, our condo, and, would watch it together and kiki and have chips and, snacks and all that kind of stuff. So that's also fun. Being here in South Florida, a lot of bars will show it and have, the crowd come and that sort of thing. I'm typically watching at home, by myself lately. And I actually like that because I record it and then I can fast forward because I hate commercials, y'all. I hate commercials. Ooh. So I can fast forward through it or, do the watch live thing. So typically over the last, I'd say probably year, I've been at home watching by myself.
And on YouTube, they do the highlights of seasons now on YouTube.
Yes.
So that's always great. You can see, boom, and they'll highlight even one queen and all of the fabulous moments. I think I'm going to wait for that because I love no commercials. Let's skip over the bitchiness and let me see the artistry. Because that's what it truly is, an artistry. So question, here's the debate. A friend of mine said that they have to get the outfits ahead of time and they make them ahead of time sometimes, or are they making them on the spot?
So they do both.
Okay.
So to my knowledge and understanding, in talking to a few queens over the years and meeting a few queens, that sort of thing, my understanding is that they're told ahead of time what the challenges will be or what the runway category will be. So they have to plan according, right? Sometimes they come out in big, huge things. Well, that's going to take time to design and that sort of thing, right? But then on the show, in real time, they have design challenges, sewing challenges. So there's a lot of queens, even to this day. This season, there were queens that came on that had no sewing skills whatsoever. Girl, we are in season 16. How are you going to come on the show and not know how to use a Singer sewing kit? I'm going to need you to take a tutorial after you get selected to be on the show.
Stop. You know, it's interesting too, when we cannot talk about Drag Race and not talking about the judges. Because some of those comments on the runway, I just sit there and pee my pants a little bit.
Die.
I'm like, what? Oh my goodness. So when you have Ross on, he comes up with the great one-liners.
He does.
You know, shout out to Mother, RuPaul, she is this killing it in every aspect with her books, with everything. I mean, what she's
her
doing,
music,
her TV shows, and every time there's a drag race in the world, that's her thing.
That's queens.
Queens. Hello. I love how she teaches the queens, you can make this your opportunity. What do you think, I'm figuring out the queens that make the opportunity happen for them, They got that mindset like Tix Monsoon. She's making it happen. Broadway, this and this and this and this. But some queens just have a wah, wah, wah kind of after drag.
Yeah.
You got to work that.
You do. I think it boils down to, and I've thought about this a lot over the years, what is it that makes certain queens rise to the top?
Yeah.
There's queens that are selling out shows at the Metropolitan Opera House, at Carnegie Hall. Like, how are they getting to that level and the other ones are not? I don't necessarily know if it's, you know, the having the right team around you, having the right market for yourself. Is it a, you know, talent is there too. And not to say that they're all not talented, but some queens they just have that it factor, right? Yeah. They just know how to hit the different acting scene. I want to tell you this though. I am loving all these new commercials that are featuring drag queens. Like there's the, well, I ain't gonna say your name because we ain't trying to pay for it, but there's a new product. There's a new product out. Right. Where one of the queens is in it and she's so fucking tech. Like, that'll tell you who it is, right? Like, and she was actually here in Fort Lauderdale and I ran into her at the Alibi. So shout out to her and some of the queens we took photos with. Like, they're such fun people and really cool and down to earth. And I think it's just that it's that grind, and not to say that others aren't grinding more than others or whatever, but it's so interesting to watch how some, you know, kind of stay with the local performing or they travel around and just get the bar scene. But there's ones that are clearly taking their arts and their talent to a completely other level. You know what comes out on Friday? I'm going to plug it.
What's that?
I love it. I have never missed a season.
Tell me.
Tomorrow, Friday, April 26th, is the premiere of the new season of We're Here.
I love that show. I do love that show.
Which is featuring my favorite, Latrice Royale. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and what I knew, the impact that Drag Race had when I saw a liquor commercial. Mm-hmm. I was looking around going, okay, y'all. Yes. This is real mainstream. So shout out, we'll put that in the program notes. Make sure y'all check out and support the queens because y'all, listen, it's a not easy life. It reminds me, what was that song? It's hard out here for, it's hard out here for a, not the pimp, it's hard out here for a queen. It's hard out here,
everybody.
It's hard out here for an author. It's hard out
here. Everybody's trying to grind. Everybody's trying to grind. What I love about, and I think we talked about this before or mentioned it before, is drag queens were really around during the AIDS epidemic. They were the ones taking care of us. They were the ones putting diapers on. They were the ones holding our hair back when people were, you know, upchucking and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We owe them a tremendous amount of respect and support and love because of what they did during the height of the AIDS epidemic. One, two, the drag queens really are, and the artistry of drag queens, it is about a celebration. It is about artistry. It is about entertainment. It's about spreading love. There's a tremendous amount of them that are fundraising focused, right, on their platforms and speaking for important causes. There's so much that the drag queen world has done for our LGBTQ plus community. We need to give them their flowers. Absolutely. We need to give them their just due and their
respect. And that's a great segue into our final segment of who's making a difference and who's making a difference in your life and who are you supporting and we should support and we should know more about.
So you go first. Who's making a difference for you?
Well, I got to, because it's politics and drag queens. That's what we're talking about, politics and drag queens. So going back to politics, which I'm a little bit more of, I'm fascinated with the world of politics. I try not to live so much in it, especially if it's not an election year, but it is an election year. So, we wrote an article on Rustin, and Rustin came out on Netflix. But right after that, there was Shirley on Netflix, and that was Shirley Chisholm. Story about Shirley Chisholm. What I love about Shirley Chisholm, you know, she was a political pioneer, the first African-American woman to run for a major party to become president. You know, Shirley Chisholm really changed the game. And what she really talked about was trailblazing and making not just for her to win, but to make sure every other person behind her would come through and would have the opportunities to run and to win. She also, you know, was an advocate for minorities and women. So it was a combination of both. And I believe that this you know, Regina King. Oh my goodness. I forgot it was Regina King. I'm like going, if she doesn't win another Emmy, hello, y'all, if you're listening, give Regina King another Emmy, because that was
absolutely the greatest.
And her sister was in it as well. I think the whole entire way they and she produced, and she got everything. I mean, she was the producer and just the acting. But Shirley Chisholm really impacted civil rights. There was a time where, you know, they weren't supporting her, and the Black Panthers came out and said, okay, we'll support you, after having the confrontation. And her, just what she brought into, and she landed here in Florida, of all places, you know, and she came back and lived the rest of her life, and she passed away here in Florida. But her whole life was dedicated to making it an equal opportunity for Blacks, women, for minorities. So my Making a Difference is Shirley Chisholm. So watch Shirley on Netflix, y'all.
I can't wait to see that movie. Cannot wait. Like you said, echoing your sentiment, Regina King looks amazing playing
amazing.
That role.
Yes.
I'm sensing Oscar, and I haven't even watched it yet, but I just feel like in my spirit.
You know.
Yes. Yep.
Who's making a difference for you, yo?
So my Making a Difference is an organization that put on a conference I was just attending in Seattle, Washington. It is NMAC. And NMAC's mission is really to normalize discussion about race within the HIV movement. They focus on bending the curve of new HIV diagnoses. And then their focus is also retaining people of color living with HIV in care. When I tell you the level of inspiration and motivation that I witnessed from, and it didn't matter, it was a biomedical conference put on by NMAC, and it was supported by, you know, Gilead and multiple other sponsors. But when I tell you the level of education that was present, the level of camaraderie and collaboration, the level of information about trying to end this epidemic by 2030, I just walked away going, these are my people. Like, yeah. I need to continue to be a part of ending this epidemic that has literally taken people's lives, that still impacts Black and brown marginalized communities at a higher rate than others. We don't talk about HIV like we used to, because people think, oh, there's medication. No, absolutely.
It ain't over.
There's still no cure. There are still people that die, and no reason for people to still die from the HIV AIDS epidemic because of where medication is now. People are dying because there's a lack of education. There's still a tremendous amount of stigma around the words alone, HIV and AIDS, right? So I just am so thankful, and I love the NMAC. Shout out to Toni Newman, the director at NMAC, and for all of her incredible work. I got to see who I call sort of one of the godfathers of HIV movement from a Black LGBTQ perspective, my friend Phil Wilson. I just, again, I know we talked about him in the last segment, but he was there and was one of the main speakers, and we just have so much more work to do. So my Making a Difference is NMAC, the NMAC organization.
Thank you for bringing that light. And, you know, yesterday I had a chance to work with a healthcare, corporate healthcare. I will not name the name, but corporate healthcare, where they brought me in to talk about spirituality. And so there are companies out there that are looking at how spirituality is a form of healthcare. It is probably what will help you to impact you in such a powerful way. No matter if you're taking the meds, you still need to do the work, like meditation and your affirmations, and shift your mind. And then next week, I have another meeting with another major company out there. I'm not going to mention the name, but one day I will, that I will be doing some workshops for them as well. And it's called community engagement. And you know about that. You've done many community engagements out there. So I'm so grateful for companies that are saying, hey, Rev, can you come in and do something on spirituality for us? And how do we get this message to our people? So, because it's not over, y'all. It's not over. Absolutely. We still got to make a difference out there. Oh, child, agreed. I am like, ooh, I need a nap after that show.
We did our thing again. We did our thing again. Yes.
Now we did our thing again. A couple things, just a reminder, y'all. Our website is going up, and it's going up very, very soon. It is Grits and Glitter, the pod net website's going up. We are on YouTube, and you're probably watching this one on YouTube, and we are all over the place. We are, how many different, I mean, our distribution for the podcast is everywhere.
It is everywhere.
Radio,
Spotify,
Apple. We just, yeah. Like, we launched big.
We did.
That's huge. And what's our social media?
So Grits and Glitter, the pod on Facebook, on Instagram. Obviously, you can connect with both Skip and myself on those platforms as well. Rev Skip and Terry Dyer on those platforms. We're easy to find.
It in the program notes and the, yes. And the ending credits. You'll get it there. And you know what? We're looking for an intern. Who wants to come and support us?
Hello?
This is a lot of work. We looking for an intern, child. Come on out and learn
social
about
media,
the
podcast. If you're good, right? You know, if you're good with the social media, but we need your help.
I am always excited and always inspired by spending time with you. Thank you, my brother.
Same. Thanks, it's always so good to see you smiling.
Oh, my goodness. And you too, because we have great smiles, right?
You got big old smiles, y'all.
Right on. Okay, y'all. Until next time, just be kind to people. Just love people because they need the love. All right? So we'll see you next episode, and you'll hear us next episode, and you'll see us next episode.
Thanks for watching and listening. Keep it up. Keep subscribing.
Please. Peace and blessings, y'all.
Remember to like, share, and leave a comment wherever you listen to your podcasts.